Hello friends, and welcome to a slice of podcast history, the Kings of Anglia, Ipswich Town podcast, now twice a week, giving you more for free, good value. My name is Mark Heath, I'm your host as ever. We are in the Archon office, so apologies if the sound quality is not like it is in the IO Radio bunker. And joining me this week is Andy Warren.
Hello.
Stuart Watson.
Hello.
There is no intro music in the Archon office because it's not a studio. Also, Roscoe, young Roscoe, is sat at his desk. There's not enough room in this office to have him on this part of the show. So basically, going forward, we're hoping to bring you two podcasts a week in 2020. Monday will always be the flagship show with all the associated nonsense, looking back at the weekend and looking ahead to various other issues. And this one, hopefully, ideally on a Thursday, sometimes a Friday, depending on days off midweek games, is going to be ostensibly a preview show, also incorporating mailbag from here on in.
So is this no nonsense?
This is not no nonsense, my friend.
Strictly business.
It's not strictly business. It will always be a little bit of nonsense. But nonsense when it's called for, I like to think.
Rather than the uncalled for nonsense of, yeah, of a Monday.
There's a lot of uncalled for nonsense on the Monday show. So boys, how's your week going?
It's going all right.
Excellent. What did we make of the big news? Harry and Meghan pulling out of royal life, as it were?
We've just been discussing this, haven't we? Has the Queen lost the dressing room?
There are signs that she has, aren't there? The good name of Andrew has been besmirched of late, which I'm not happy about. And now exits, which are always likely in January, aren't they?
And she didn't even know about it, apparently. So that's a definite sign that she's lost the dressing room, as you say, Stu. Question is, who comes in and takes caretaker charge to guide them through a difficult period and keep them up this season?
What, you're sacking the Queen?
Well, she's obviously, I mean, she can go upstairs. She can be Director of Royal Affairs.
Neil Warnock.
Yeah?
He's available.
Harry? Is he out there still?
Yeah. I don't know if you want a Harry figure in there. I think his tax...
True. Not issues. The background royals one. How about Big Mick? He'd come in, he'd tell him what for.
He's aligned to Republic of Ireland, which brings its own...
Wow. I don't think you can just bring in a football manager. I think you can't just suddenly throw out royal protocol.
Yeah.
So I think if you're looking in-house, because the royals always produce from within, don't they, off the academy production
line. Academy.
Charles is going to be the sort of steady hand at the tiller, caretaker role. He's your Brian Clough. He's been about for a little while. He'd be doing it very reluctantly, I think. And then, I don't know, there'd be a clamour for young blood, wouldn't there? An up and coming sort of someone with fresh ideas.
You know who I'd like to see? Mike Tindall.
Ah.
He's not off the Academy production line, but he is schooled there.
Yeah.
He was brought in at an older age. He's learnt the ways. He's come through the system. He knows what's going on. Mike Tindall.
World Cup winner as well. So he's got World Cup on his record. I'd like to see that. He'd shake things up, wouldn't he?
Give it Mike Tindall.
That's the message. Boys, let's talk about football. Less of this nonsense.
Was that uncalled for nonsense?
No, that was called for.
Good.
We've decided the future of the monarchy in that nonsense. Accrington Stanley this weekend. We'll get onto that in a minute. From royalty to Accrington Stanley. That's never happened before on a podcast, I'm sure. There we go. Making history, like I said. Let's talk before we go on to Accrington Stanley.
Who were they?
Yes, we have to do that, didn't we?
Exactly.
Let's talk about transfers, the sexy stuff, because Hutchie Warren, this is your time of year, this is your time to shine. This morning you've been working the phones and you've come up with two transfer lines which are hot off the press, which you can inform the people of now. Go for it.
It's kind of accidentally become my area.
No, you
this
love
is,
it.
Well, I do now, I haven't always. This was a happy accident. What do you want first?
Well, give us the one. I mean, there's two transfer lines you've done this morning. One of them is about a striker, which is always sexier. So why don't we start with that?
Danny Rowe. There's only two Danny Rowes. And the other one is not a winger for Ipswich. He plays for AFC Fylde in the National League. I think he's scored more than 180 goals in 280 games for them over five and a half seasons. Ipswich have kept an eye on him. He's now on the transfer list because other clubs have been coming in and putting in offers for him. He's out of contract in the summer. Ipswich aren't one of those clubs. They've not made a bid. They haven't taken their interest that far, but they have been watching him. And that's that, really.
And,
what do you want to know?
There's a great irony here that when Ipswich signed the winger Danny Rowe from Macclesfield, we had to kind of unpick his Wikipedia page from the striker Danny Rowe, who we're now currently talking about. And our Danny was kind of asked about that in an interview, and he sort of joked that the two of them had kind of almost become the same player, weirdly. So there would be a great irony if they ended up with both of them. Maybe they wanted this one all along, and they ended up with the wrong Danny Rowe.
He's Danny L. Rowe, and ours is Danny M. Rowe.
And do we know what that stands for?
I'm going to say Liam.
Liam, I would have gone for Liam.
I'm going to say Lucas.
What's the M for?
Michael.
Danny Michael Rowe.
Marvellous.
Marvellous, good.
Marvellous Danny Rowe, yeah. The boxer. I'll be honest, I think this one seems a little unlikely. I'm not sure it's what Ipswich need. He's not... I think we spoke on the last podcast about a target man. He's not quite that. He's good with the ball at his feet. He's 6 foot plus, he's 6 foot two, I think. Strong, good with his back to goal, can hold it up. He's not this kind of different option off the bench that you were talking about on Monday.
No.
Necessarily. I'm not sure you're mixing up the way Ipswich play by bringing in... He's 30 as well, that's worth saying.
I thought about that a bit more. I think a target man, you can come in two different guises. You can have a big target man who wins flick-ons and is a battering ram type. You can also have a sort of a focal point target man, someone who backs into centre-backs, makes the ball stick at their feet, becomes a bit of a link-up player. Again, have Ipswich got someone like that at the moment? Keane's a link-up player, but in terms of quick first-time layoffs, he's not strong for his size. He's not someone who hustles and bustles against centre-backs. So maybe if they want to play direct in a more attractive style, that's the type of target man that you would go for.
So you're saying you want Danny L. Rowe?
Danny L. I'm not saying that at all, because wow. I don't know anything about him. And you're right, he's 30 years of age. I think if you're looking to non-league, you're looking at a younger ilk of striker or player in general, possibly.
He's never played above National League level either. I think he's got a background with Lincoln, Stockport and Fleetwood, all in National League level. I would be surprised. Some things I've heard about him is that he's obviously a goal scorer. He can play with both feet. He can take free kicks as well. But on the flip side, doesn't offer an awful lot aside from being a striker, which... I'm not sure if Paul Lambert would want that. You want a bit more. I think he wants a bit more press, a bit more energy from his strikers. So it sounds like he watched him personally recently, and I'm sure he'd have seen for himself. He's also on a bit of a cold streak this season. Only 6 goals.
Useless. Yeah. You have to say, if he's 30 years old and he's not played above non-league before, there has to be a reason for that, isn't there?
That's what everyone I've spoken to about him has kind of said, really. There are reasons for it. He almost went to Cheltenham the summer Paul Hurst was at Ipswich. Cheltenham were a League 2 team then for 170 grand. I think it's kind of accepted that was maybe his time to make that kind of move rather than now. But they definitely watched him. It's just whether that goes any further.
So on Hutchie's hot or not rating, is this a not?
It's a lukewarm cup.
Tepid.
Of...
Tepid.
Yeah. Is tepid hotter or colder than lukewarm?
Probably colder. Around the same. Yeah.
Is it?
I suppose lukewarm implies there is some warmth in there, as tepid is.
Let's go tepid.
Okay, tepid. Something else that's been tepid has been Toto Insiala's form for Ipswich this season. And you've got together another little transfer line this morning. Seems like Big Totes is on his way out the door, and I can't say I blame him.
Yeah, he could well be off on loan to Bolton, probably alone. There's some talk of it being a permanent move, but I think that's unlikely. Bolton can't pay transfer fees. They're in an embargo, which restricts them from doing that. Got to say as well, this one was first reported from TWTD. We followed that up this morning. And it sounds like that could happen. Toto's Ipswich career could be over by the weekend.
Sad times.
If you're Ipswich, so Bolton can't pay fees, so you're either talking about him going on a free transfer or a loan. Now, we kind of know which direction Toto's Ipswich career has gone in this year, but I don't know. He's still under contract for a little while.
18 months
left. So why would you not send him out on loan? Because if he goes there and does really well, you've still got a chance of getting a transfer fee for him and recouping some of that money in the summer. So, Saturday felt like a bit of a watershed moment for him at Exeter. He had a bit of a disaster down there, and that was kind of maybe the last straw on top of a few other situations. We talked about him a lot on the last podcast about how, you know, the injury in pre-season set him down a bit of a different path to one that he might have been on otherwise. But this season has not been good for him, and if he goes, then maybe they need another centre-back.
Which brings us on to the big question. Toto's gone. Is the prodigal son, Tommy of House Smith, is he coming home?
Can I also just point out, we talked about a great irony about Danny Rowe earlier. There's also a great irony about Toto Nsiala potentially going to Bolton, because when they signed Josh Emmanuel earlier in the summer, they actually used a picture of Toto. So maybe they wanted him all along.
Subliminal.
But yeah, Tommy Smith, what do you reckon?
It looks too sensible to happen. It looks too... Do you know what I mean? It just looks like...
Too easy.
Too easy. Yeah. Too, out goes Nsiala. In comes left-footed, experienced campaigner.
Homegrown.
He's currently back home.
Training with Town.
He's training there.
Yeah.
It does seem to make too much sense not to happen. That's not to say that it's definitely going to happen, but it all adds up there into being something quite good.
I think Paul was at pains to play this down before. It's just a favour. He's just training with the 23s. But it just feels like certain things are falling into place now. And he keeps talking about sell to buy. You know, maybe Toto's exit kind of opens up things a little bit more for this. He needs some left-footed balance at the back. And I just feel like this might tug at Tommy's heartstrings. What was the phrase you used in America? They call it a...
Hometown discount.
A hometown discount, which I quite like that. And I think that would apply to Tommy. He's been away. He's had his little adventure in the States for what?
Two seasons.
Two seasons now. Both him and his wife are Ipswich people. They've got a lot of friends and family here. They'll have had a little taste of that at Christmas time coming back over. And he would be returning a bit of a hero. Sometimes your status is elevated with fans when you go away, you know, whether you're injured or you leave. There were concerns over his back injury when he left, but he seems to have been playing regularly while he's away. He'd be ideal, I think, for where Ipswich are at this juncture in League One. A leader, you know, a bit of a mini captain for the team as well, would have a good, you know, he'd be linking up again with a lot of the young players that he would have, you know, known from before as well. So it makes sense on a lot of levels if there's a deal to be done.
Not too long ago, in fact, I wrote a story with Tommy Smith quotes saying that he'd love to come back to Ipswich Town one day. So it all seems, as you say, Hutchie, far too perfect.
Yeah.
Surely Town will find a way not to make it that simple. Anyway.
I'd prefer that to Christoph Berra, I have to
that's
say.
That's not happening.
That's the other one, because he's been made available by Hearts. He's made his feelings pretty clear that he feels a little bit let down by Hearts. I think he's still got 18 months left on his contract. Left Ipswich, signed a 3-year deal up there, and seems to have been jettisoned out of nowhere. And again, people have sort of talked about him returning, but he's that little bit older, Christoph. I'm not sure he would quite fit into the style of play that perhaps they're talking. And that's not to say Tommy Smith is a ball-playing centre-back by any stretch, but I just think Christoph's that little bit further down the line in terms of age. I think he'll be keen to stay up in Scotland anyway. He moved up there to be nearer to his daughter anyway, so I'd be surprised if there was anything doing on that one.
Oh, and of course, just written down for me, nice little jog of their memory, Hutchie. But, of course, the other bit of news that's broken since we spoke on Monday, he will not be returning to Ipswich Town, at least in this transfer window. He'll be staying at Millwall. Slightly odd deadline, very early in the transfer window, expired. Do tell us more.
There was a recall clause in there. We knew there would be a recall clause. We've been talking about that. We didn't know it expired so early in the window, but that expired on Tuesday night. So Ipswich now can't recall him and sell him elsewhere. So he'll be at Millwall for the season. There's a chance they might still make that permanent in January, but the fact there's no recall clause means there's no rush from them on that, and that's more likely to happen in the summer. So I'm not sure there was as much of a market for paying a big fee, decent fee for Bart in January as you might think. January's a tough time to buy goalkeepers. not for the goalkeeper market, sorry, not necessarily clubs out there looking to buy. They're normally set with your number one by January. Mm. So with that in mind, I think that clause expired, and yep, he'll be at Millwall. Be at Millwall for the season, at least.
Okay. Should we move on to preview? Shelve the sexy stuff. Move on to preview.
No more sex.
We're British.
Accrington's pretty sexy, though.
Is it?
You haven't been.
I can't say as it strikes me as a sexy place.
We've been
Accrington.
Twice.
I know, and every time you've been, town have lost. So yeah. It's not good omens ahead of this weekend's game, which is, as you said, Hutchie, the biggest game potentially of Paul Lambert's time at Town. So far, certainly since the Boxing Day game against the mighty Gills. How are we going to do this preview then? What do you want to start with, Stuart Watson? You brought in copious notes.
Do you want a little brief lowdown on Accrington?
I do. Yeah. I'd love a little minute or
so. A little brief lowdown on Accrington. We like Accrington as a club, don't we? We
yep.
felt very welcome the couple of times they've been up there. They seem like a well-run club under Andy Holt, who seems to be a bit of a man of the people chairman, who's kind of battling against the various financial unlevel playing field situation in football. But I digress. They went through in the EFL Trophy on Tuesday night, so they've had less of a break than Ipswich for this one. They beat Fleetwood on penalties, and they put a pretty strong team out for that one. They only made four changes from their league game last weekend, so they are one of the handful of clubs who haven't been to Wembley. I think one of only two that have not been to Wembley in any of its guys, old or new. So they're desperate to get to the final in that one. So they put out a strong team in midweek, squeaked through on penalties against Fleetwood. They've been on a bit of a decent run. If you look at the form table, they're right up there. That's just tailed off a little bit in the last few games, but just having a little look at my notes. They went on a good run. They went
How many
on a
notes
good run.
Have you got?
You might have too many notes.
Yes,
too
I
many
think you've notes. Befuddled yourself in doctor style by having too many notes. You've got pages.
I had a little look at the form table myself.
Yeah.
And I haven't written it down. But since I think we've been talking about Ipswich's run since the win at Rochdale, haven't we? And since then, the form table has Accrington in third and Ipswich in 21st. Yeah. Which. Yeah.
Accrington are 17th, aren't they, in the table?
I've found it now. They lost 2-1 at Rochdale prior to that EFL Trophy game, but before that loss, they were 7 unbeaten. So they're on a decent run, and what Andy's just said there sort of highlights it, really.
And they beat Pompey, didn't they, 4-1?
Beat Pompey 4-1. They thrashed Bolton 7-1 at the start of that run. They just seem to be a team that's kind of coming together as a team. There's a lot of players in there, homegrown players that are starting to get to the 50, 100 appearances mark. They just seem to know what they were doing. They were a well-drilled team when Ipswich went up there. And that was kind of the start of Ipswich's decline, that run. That was off, if you remember, that was off the back of the Wickham game being called off. And then so we had the double curse of a TV game and the post-international break curse. And of course, Ipswich managed to lose that 2-0. And obviously, that double curse did extra damage to Ipswich because that was the start of the decline. They lost to Rotherham at home off the back of that. Then they had the little mini sort of pick-up in form where they beat Southend and Rochdale, was it? And then of course, they've been on this giant winless run since then. So that's kind of, you can kind of go back to that Accrington game as the start of the decline for Ipswich, can't you?
We talked about the double curse cancelling themselves out, didn't we? That definitely did not happen.
What are your memories of that day up there? I mean, we've talked about Toto. That was the day that he came back into the team. That was his comeback game. He gave away a pretty clumsy penalty, got subbed at half-time. They'd started with wing-backs. They were getting overrun massively down the flanks. I think it was the down Ipswich's left where they just seemed to concede so many crosses. And that they kind of gave up on wing-backs at half-time that day. Then we ended up with Gwion Edwards at right-back in the second
proper
half.
Proper right-back, though, wasn't it? Not even wing-back.
A right-back in a 4-4-2, and that was horrible. Wolfenden might have had one that crossed the line. Yes, McConville probably should have been sent off for that horrible studs-up tackle.
That was a horrible tackle, wasn't it?
On Edwards, right in front of us. And then Dobra got sent off towards the end for a bit of a petulant swing of the elbow towards his man, but that wasn't a good day. There was, and we came away from that going, that was poor, but there was no Norwood, there was no Downs. I think that was in the very early stages of Vincent Young being out, and we were going, okay, you know, just park that and move on, and hopefully there are reasons behind that. And I don't think we could have foreseen what was coming off the back of that day.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I think Thomas Holy was very critical of himself after that game, wasn't he? Which I think was also started being the start of the goalkeeper rotation. That was kind of the end of, I think Holy was ever present in the league up until then, and ever since. It's been one in, one out with those two as well, which I think is quite harsh on himself there, but it was clearly the start of something in Paul Lambert's mind, at least.
Before we move on to Town then, on Saturday, let's just stick with Accrington a little bit longer. What's his name? McConville, he's gone, isn't he? He's injured.
He's out for the season, and that's massive, because he's their captain. They're talking about losing him as much for his voice and his leadership as his ability on the pitch. They kind of play a diamond, quite a narrow 4-4-2 system, but he kind of plays as the left-sided one of those. So he's just done his Achilles on New Year's Day, and he's had surgery on that, and they're horrible injuries. He's out at least for this season. So he's a big loss. Colby Bishop, who's their big striker, who scored twice in the game up at their place, who is one of their several sort of non-league success stories that they've recruited from. He's missed the last four games with a back injury. May or may not be back this weekend. So Ipswich will be hoping that he's out as well.
I like him. He's a good mix of kind of big man and actually being a good football player as well. I like him. But I also quite like the guy who is sort of in his place, Zanzala. He was a handful. Slightly erratic, didn't seem to always know what he was doing himself. But that can be a bit of a chaos agent sometimes in a defence, and Ipswich didn't enjoy playing him last time. So even if Bishop isn't able to play, I think Zanzala is a tough one to handle.
Enough worrying about the opposition, boys. Let's talk about Town. Do you want to talk about Town?
Yes.
I'm not sure with all these notes. You were flipping over. You were looking at me like, actually, I've got some more to say. But no. Let's talk about Town. Stuart Watson, you're the honey badger. You're on his shoes. Good luck. What team are you putting out this weekend?
Oh, it's a really tough one, isn't it? Because we keep asking him to settle on a formation. And we've talked about this loads now. The rotation of personnel doesn't bother me as much as the constant changing of formation. We talked there about the system being changed at half-time at Accrington. That's happened loads, where they're not only changing formation every game, but quite often doing it within games as well. I want them to settle on something, but then in the next breath I'm going to talk about playing a slightly different system to what they've played. I'm not a huge fan of the wing-backs at the moment. I just want to go back to a back four, go back to basics. I think the return of Teddy Bishop kind of changes the dynamic of things a little bit. So I'm going to throw out a system that's a 4-2-3-1 type system. And I want Holy in goal. And I think everyone wants Holy in goal at the moment. He's come back into... Norris had three fairly erratic games on the spin, two of which he made sort of mistakes for goals. Holy came in and I thought he did absolutely fine down at Exeter. In fact, he made a superb save from the free kick right at the end. I don't really care what the Wolves recall situation is with Norris. I think if you're starting him to tick off clauses in his contract to keep him, then that's a dangerous route to go down. So it would be Holy in goal for me, but I wouldn't be shocked to see Norris come back in, which I think would be the wrong thing for me. But what do you reckon on goalkeeper, Andy?
I agree. I think if you've rotated goalkeepers based on a need to get them fit, if one then has a run of three games where they've been poor, how can you not then put the guy in that's done very little wrong? I don't see how you, in this scenario, how you wouldn't play Holy for any other reason other than what you just mentioned in terms of recall clauses. I think I wouldn't shock me at all if Norris played. Wolves are still able to recall him until the end of the month, and there are eyes being kept on that from a Wolves end. Ipswich definitely like Will Norris, but it wouldn't shock me if he was playing at the weekend. But I think I agree with you, that would be the wrong. But just in an era where you're changing the goalkeeper sort of regularly, you have to then give people a game when they've when they've deserved it, and I think Holy does.
I think some of the goals they've conceded recently may have come down to the communication between goalkeeper and defence. You know, that has not settled. I think as a back four, you kind of know when your goalkeeper's going to come and when they're not going to come and what they're going to do, and you get used to a certain voice behind you. So we've talked a lot about the rotation of the goalkeepers, but I'd like to see Holy in there. If he's not, then that's a non-footballing decision for me, clear and simple. So we'll see what happens there.
I agree with you with the back four, by the way. I'm not manager, quite some distance away from being the manager.
Who's closer, you to being manager or Mike Tindall to being Queen?
Well, Tindall's on the staff.
Yeah,
he's not going to be the Queen.
He's in the dressing room. Yeah,
he is already on board. Yeah. I'm currently employed elsewhere.
You're on the outside looking in.
He's pissing inside the tent, pissing out.
Yeah,
is that what Tindall's doing?
I think that
probably
yeah.
is as well. Rugby boy.
he's had a few tins.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, we digress. Back four. Please.
Sorry, carry on.
But here's the one I've got. I've got Danasian at right back, and Andy's got it on good authority that he will be fit to return to the team. Say what you like about him in terms of his overall abilities as a footballer, but I think he is just the solid right-back option that they probably need for the current form that they're in. Chambers, Wolfenden as the other centre-back. We discussed about how Wolfenden has had a few little moments recently. You could maybe make an argument that Wilson is the more consistent option at the moment, just to get it out of touch, head it away. I'd still be just going with Wolfenden, just let him make his mistakes, let him grow as a centre-back. I'm toying with what to do at left-back because I thought Kenlock had a really good game at Exeter last weekend. And you go back to the start of the season when they were winning games and it was Kenlock at left-back, Garbutt in front of him. And now, do we romanticise that in our minds now and say that, well, that's what was working earlier in the season, we go back to that? When we sat here in these podcasts, we talked about Kenlock being the weak link quite a lot, didn't we? And there's a reason that changed and why Garbutt's ended up at left back. But just his performance last weekend, if you're talking about rewarding people, if you play well, you keep your place. I'd be inclined to go with Miles again at left back and move Garbutt further forward. Reason being, I don't think Freddie Sears is necessarily ready to start a second game in a week, having been out for so long. And the type of injury it's at. I think Freddie will probably end up playing that left-sided role. But for this game, Kenlock at left-back, Garbutt in front of him. Midfield, Downs, obviously, and Dizelle I've gone with because I think those two dovetail really nicely. And I'd like to see that given a chance to thrive as a partnership. I think at home, when you're trying to unlock the door against stubborn opposition who are defending deep and raising their game, I want to see Andre in there. I want to see more from him than the four or five good passes a game. I think he can do more in terms of wanting the ball and bossing the game more. Cole Skuse, sadly, started the season really well, but much like last season, he's had an injury, he's come back and he's not quite looked as at it, Cole Skuse. And he's 33 now and time is against him a little bit. So that's the reason I've gone with those two. Bishop, is he ready to start again? Second time in a week. He did 75 minutes, 75 really good minutes at Exeter last week. But can we be taking any risks with him?
Don't break him.
So I'd be inclined to maybe play Alan Judge as the number 10, who I wasn't at Wickham, but by all accounts looked much better in his favoured role. I hate Alan Judge out wide. I just don't think he has the positional discipline. I think he goes wandering inside. I think it leaves the fullback exposed. So play him as the number 10 in front of Downs and Dizelle. Keep Teddy up your sleeve for a bit of a wild card option off the bench to lift the crowd if you need him. Wide right, Gwion Edwards. He's been up and down this season, but sounded like he had a good start at Wickham. Improved performance.
Yeah, better in the first half. He found things a little harder after the break, but yeah, better.
And then up front, you've got a really tough decision. And I'm going with Will Keane, because I just think technically he's their best footballer in a forward sense. Norwood's not been at it for a little while now. Jackson can't play as the lone striker. Keane scored a couple of really good goals recently against Lincoln and against Exeter. And I think if they want to if they want to get the ball down and play and they want to unlock the door against Accrington, then having people like Keane, Judge, Garbutt, Downs, Dizel, they're good footballers, and I think they would all link up nicely. So
just review. Your team is Holy in goal.
Yeah.
Back four.
Danasian, Chambers, Wolfend and Kenlock.
And then you're playing 4-2-3-1. So you've got...
Dizel and Downs.
Yeah.
Edwards, Judge, Garbutt, Keane up front.
Bold.
Over to you, Andy.
What are we saying, Hutchie? Keane up front.
I like the formation. You know I like the formation. It's my jam. I'm not sure Luke Garbutt would look as effective playing as a wide forward as he would on the left of a 4-4-2. That's my fear. But I'm also not sure who else you would play wide left. I don't think Freddie fit to go again? Same conversation as Bishop, really. He didn't have anywhere near the impact as Bishop did from the start at Exeter. I've got no problem with Kenlock at left back, but you want Garbutt in the team as well. So if you're not playing him in that advanced role, I'd have him as my left back. Downs and Dizel I like. That's another reason why you want to stick with something and go with it, because they're a pair that could grow together. They bring the best out of each other. Certainly Andre looks so much better when he's playing with Flynn. They're on the same wavelength there.
It's unlikely to happen. I mean, this is what there's every chance that either Skuse or Nolan plays. Yeah.
Nolan's had a heel injury, hasn't he? Which has kept him out for a little while. I would say Dizel might be ahead of him in the pecking order. Of that, I'd like to see what Jackson can do as a wide right in what you've suggested there. I don't see a reason why he can't be effective there. And in that sort of system, that's one where you can't play him on the right of a 4-4-2. But on the right of the 4-2-3-1, I'd feel differently. I'd like to see him have a go with that. Again, not hugely enthusiastic about Judge being the wide left, but if Bishop was fit to go, I'd play him there just to get him in the team. But if you're doing that, that's a scenario where I think you probably then do need Will Keane as the striker, just to add that little bit more control. Because if you've got Norwood as the sort of crazy running around striker like he likes to do, and you've got Judge wandering inside, you could end up with a scenario where they're all on the right side of the pitch and absolutely nothing wide left, whereas I think Keane's that bit more disciplined. I like quite a lot of what you've just said, Stu. I'd make a couple of tweaks, but you started to get a group of players on there who are quite exciting, aren't you? Players that are good on the ball. Downs, Dizel, Bishop, Judge, that's four players in a front. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Front six who are really, really comfortable sort of moving the ball, making runs and then getting the ball about the pitch, and then Keane can be...
And then if you put Garbutt back into the left wing role, that's another one who's a competent footballer, and then you just start to hope that they all gel as a bit of a machine, you know.
Looking at the team there, Stewie, what you've put down, why are Town struggling? They've got so much quality for this level, haven't they? It's ridiculous.
Should do.
It really is
silly.
It's just whether you're then maybe getting into the conversations about teams coming and not doing everything they can to stop quality shining. Accrington, by all accounts, aren't like that. They're a bit more... They like to play. They're not just lump it and muscle you out of it. Merchants, they like to play a bit, but it sounds like we've only seen them a couple of times.
Well, that was the looking at the quotes that came out of their game from midweek. There was both from manager and several players that were interviewed. The consensus was we didn't play that great. Yes, we got through on penalties, but we need to play better football. We got dragged into a long ball game in the wind and the rain, and you know that's not how we want to play. So I think they'll come to Portman Road with the mindset of wanting to sort of go toe-to-toe with an Ipswich team that's not in the best run of form, and hopefully that sort of suits Ipswich and
we should
that plays into their hands. But
the
crowd and confidence and all those sort of factors will come into it. It's going to be very interesting what the feeling is around Portman Road going into this game, and you know, God forbid they go behind, or you know, it's still level for quite a period of time, how that affects the crowd, how that subsequently affects the players, whether they start making bad decisions, stuff like that all goes into the melting
pot. That's why, I think it's the biggest, certainly the biggest game for Lambert since the Burton game. I think it's with everything that's gone on, the run they've been on, the contracts, this is a good opportunity in what should be a decent game of football to watch as well. You can make a little bit of a statement here, and I think they will. I think they'll win. I think they'll win this game. But I've thought that quite a lot recently, and it hasn't happened.
We keep saying it, don't we?
Yeah, yeah.
They're gonna. It's all right. They'll do it this weekend. Yeah, it's fine. Everything's
and
okay.
Don't. And then they don't. And then that's they don't. What football does to you, isn't it?
Indeed. Any other things to mention, Stu, from your copious list of notes before we move on to a bit of mailbag to finish this historic pod?
No other business
on Accrington.
On Accrington.
From true crime to football, Brexit to folklore. For more great podcasts from Archant, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archant.
Superb. Right, we'll take a few mailbag and then we'll take our leave and be happy with the job we've done.
Because this is no nonsense, does that mean no singing?
It's not, I never said it was no nonsense. I'd say that's necessary nonsense, wouldn't you?
I've got quite a husky voice today.
Yeah, you sound sexy.
Yeah,
go for it. Come on.
Do you want a husky version of the mailbag?
Of course.
Barry White.
Are you ready? Yeah. Are you ready with the bells at the end, Sue?
I'm always ready.
Mailbag. It's time for Mark, Candy and Stu to dip into the mailbag.
There we go.
Thanks, Stu.
Unplugged. Acoustic.
Exactly.
In an office and not a studio. James Gulk. Good question from James.
Gulk.
Big fan of the Atlanta Falcons, is James.
The Dirty Birds.
The Dirty Birds. Not so
is
great
that what
this season.
Called?
Yeah, you do the Dirty Bird if you're an Atlanta Falcon, don't you, when you score. He wants to know, is not getting promotion this season as disastrous as it's being made out to be? Teams such as Leeds and Sheffield United took multiple attempts to get out of League One. As the old adage goes, do you want it right or do you want it right now?
Yeah, very good point. We discussed this the other day, didn't we? When Ipswich go up, you want them to be ready to go up. And I say when, as if it's guaranteed to happen. But most clubs of Ipswich's ilk that have come down to League One have made it back. Portsmouth went down one other level, but they're a little bit different because they had all sorts of financial issues.
Same with Coventry, they went down League Two, didn't they?
But yeah.
Financially,
and Blackpool had all sorts of financial. Ipswich aren't in that bracket of clubs where everything has completely gone tits up from a financial point of view. Whatever you say about Marcus, there is an element of stability there with them. So if you then look at the other clubs like Forest, Sheffield United, Leeds, all the others, you know, some got back quicker than others, but they did. Sheffield United took the longest, I think, was it five seasons with them. And when they got back, they were ready. And then, you know, now look what's happened to them since. So is there an argument that would you want Ipswich to scrape promotion by hook or crook this season? And I think by general consensus, this squad would need a hell of a lot of improving to be competitive in the Championship again. Does it need another year? And I'm just playing devil's advocate. Does it need another year for some of the young players to development? Could you keep hold of them for another year if you weren't to go up?
Well, that's the one, isn't it? It's about if you're talking about staying down, building, and actually building and going up stronger, then you can see why that would be fine. But if you, I think we're talking about promotion being so urgent. Is a lot of that's in relation to Downs and Wolfenden, isn't it? Because largely, the consensus would be that they will be playing Championship football, if not higher, come next season. And the way that Ipswich ensured that's with them is by going up. But no, it's not as if you don't go up this season, that's it. That's it forever. You're League One now. There is a way back, and there is a healthy way back as well. But I'll tell you, Sheffield United, five years, and yeah, look how they've come back. It's been brilliant. I don't think they necessarily enjoyed the intervening period. And for Ipswich, a lot of the positive for this season has been how the crowd has come back, how they've brought in new fans, strength of feeling there. I would worry that 5 years of League One football, when you're not always going to be pushing for promotion on the final day or losing playoff finals, It might not be like that if you get stuck down and lose your players. I'd worry that that would start, would a lot of those gains would start to slip away, which would leave the club ultimately not as strong. I think given they've managed to boost attendances, bring fans back, I think getting up and the benefits of that are huge. So, yeah, I don't know what my point is.
The novelty wears off very quickly. Yeah. You won't be taking 3,000 to Accrington and MK Dons and whatnot. You'd see a drop off in that. You wouldn't be getting crowds of sort of 18, 19, 20,000. That slow decline would start again, and you just fear that the quicksands of League One would take hold. And yeah, I mean, I get the feeling from the noises being made by Lee O'Neill and others at the club is that they don't necessarily have budgeted or think that they will bounce back straight away, and you can't say that in a public sense, but Lee O'Neill keeps talking about, I know it's not what people want to hear, but there is a long-term plan here. And
but that's sensible.
Yeah.
That's sensible budgeting, isn't it? That's sensible business approach. That's not gambling. That's just what Marcus has shown to be. And I'd rather have an owner like that than one that's got all the eggs in promotion basket. Sorry, I've interrupted you.
That's right.
Good question, James. There's a lot of questions about Bart, which obviously we already touched on, but if you have a question about Bart, much appreciated. Next up, Harvey Davis.
Friend of the show.
Number three or four? I think he's four. Anyway, he's definitely a friend
possibly
of the show.
Possibly four.
Probably an impossible question to answer, he says, but why are we always late with transfer business? You look at Peterborough and Oxford, they've both made quality additions so far. Our recruitment strategy always seems disorganised and a bit all over the place, IMO, which in case you didn't know means in my opinion.
I like the way you've asked Harvey's question. It's like you're channelling his inner anger.
I should have said it in a Welsh accent. Because he's Welsh, of course, isn't he? Yeah. Big half.
Famously.
Famously Welsh. Our friend in Wales. So why are towns such a shambles when it comes to transfers?
It's a rarity. I know you've used two examples there of clubs signing players, but in general, things go to the last minute in a window. If you give someone a deadline in any walk of life, it tends to go down to that for a reason, because there's always going to be gamesmanship and a bit of a standoff to see who blinks first and all that sort of thing. It's a very complex situation in that quite often you're waiting for, it's like buying a house, there's a bit of a chain going on, and you're waiting for a lot of things have to fall into place for transfers to happen. So I don't think it's just a case of you identify your targets and you go out and get them on the 1st of January.
Peterborough is a bit of an unfair comparison, I think, because the way they operate is very different to others. They recruit a lot of players each year, whereas Ipswich are trying to get away from that. They're trying to bring in the quality that's better than what they've got. And when you're doing that, when you're trying to bring in quality, that takes time. And like we said on the last one, I think this window, Ipswich are in a bit of a difficult position because they're trying to recruit players that are very much top-end League One players, who most of those players could also do a good job in the Championship. And the bottom third, bottom half of that, and if you're trying to recruit those kind of players as the League One club, it's difficult because there's an instant trump card that half of the division above have got over you, and particularly also if you're trying to do loan deals, they're the slower ones because, like Stu said, there's a chain, there's things that have to fall into place with other clubs, with they'll only loan out someone once they've replaced them themselves. So if you're doing loan shopping, That's just where you are in the chain.
Old friend, the pin.
Friend of the show.
Number two.
The pin. This isn't a question, but I just want to read it out. Stuff Ipswich fans need to stop saying. Hughes needs time to recover from his injuries. Sears' return is like a new signing. We have the strongest squad in League One. Keane is a real handful at this level. Dazelle needs a run of games. Lambert saved us. He hasn't added hashtag turmoil, which he normally does.
Well, that's just a given. let's go through those. Emir Hughes one, yes, I agree, because the man himself agrees. Indeed, Andy spoke to him recently and he said, I'm not injured anymore. This whole kind of being wrapped in cotton wool thing, no longer, you know, yes, he was out for 2 years, but he's had a whole pre-season. He's played 10 plus starts now, reached various milestones. He wants to be kind of judged on being fully fit, and by his own admittance, he's not at the level he wants to be at yet. What were the other ones? Sears
returns like a new signing, which obviously we joke about all the time.
Well, I said earlier about how certain players become better in people's minds that in absence.
Yeah.
When we were talking about Tommy Smith, there could be an element of that with Freddie Sears. I still think he'll be at this level. His experience and his ability will be a big plus for Ipswich. But there is a danger that we've glorified him to be the saviour in our minds. People forget that he went 40 plus games without a goal at one stage and was kind of toiling up and down the left wing in the latter stages of Mick McCarthy. So I can kind of see where the pin's coming from on that one.
He makes some interesting
points.
Dizelle
run of games.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Dizelle get a run of games.
Yeah. I feel a bit differently about that one to the rest of them. I think he does need a run of games.
Okay.
He also needs to deliver in those games, but he needs a fighting chance of doing it.
Peter Dwerryhouse also asked about, is it time for Keane? Obviously, we've spoken about that. Hutchie, and did you agree with Stewie? It is time for Keane tomorrow?
Who do you want up from?
Well, the Saturday, not tomorrow.
Well, depending on a number of factors. I still like James Norwood. I do like James Norwood. I want to see James Norwood in a team where they're creating something behind him. But I also think Will Keane is going to have... Hopefully he hasn't had his month that I've been talking about. Hopefully those three consolation goals aren't it.
Yeah.
But I think he's got a real impact to make.
Ipswich are massively invested in James Norwood. I'm not for 1 minute sort of saying, well, that's it, he's not as good as we thought, and start phasing him out. I just think at this very moment in time, go with the hot hands. But and they gave Norwood a good contract, both in terms of length and money, and you know, he is now a major piece of the building blocks going forward. So perhaps they're invested in making that work sooner rather than later. But
I'd also like to, not in the system we've recently been talking about, I'd like to see them together, which we've not really seen. I'd like to have a look at those two together at some point.
We shall see. Steve Wallers, not to be confused with Steve Waller, our hometown Ipswich Town snapper. Steve Wallers works at the University of Exeter and therefore was at the game.
Oh.
He says, as a South West based Town fan, I was sat one row behind you guys.
Yeah.
There were fans behind you,
were there? I think there was one.
Row. Okay.
I think that was it.
I thought you sat behind all the fans. I was sat one row behind you guys at Exeter. I was going to say well done on the pod after the game, but left in a distressed state. he says, the question is, I wondered which is the worst ground and conditions you've ever had to report from?
Brentford has its moments. A former colleague of mine in an old job was a bigger lad. And in winter,
yeah,
a big winter coat. It's tight enough as it is.
Is that the one where you crammed in? Like,
very much crammed in. Not a huge fan of Brentford, but I do love Griffin Park, so I'm willing to overlook it. Brentford's not great.
Where did we go? What was the non-league ground we went to in pre-season? During the Hurst era, and we played. They played.
Oh,
Crawley. They played Crawley, but East Grinstead.
East Grinstead, where we had to run a very dangerous amount of extension cables plugged one into the other through the access hatch of the
breaching all health and safety.
Yeah, that looked like that could explode at any one point. Bournemouth. I remember a game at Bournemouth where the home and away fans were on either side of the press box.
Oh,
and
dear.
They got involved in a bit of an exchange of throwing things at each other over the top of the assembled press's heads.
Were they wet things?
no, it wasn't quite being at a gig.
Yeah.
Where else?
What about conditions? I'm interested in conditions.
The Accrington Cup game was particularly testing. I was sat next to Henry Winter, actually, in that one. So, obviously, it had attracted the...
Lincoln.
Lincoln. The higher ilk of...
The Illuminati
squeezed into a press box that's not used to having that number.
Did he not
of
have
people.
His own kind of roped off section?
No, Henry was very down to earth and accessible. But
was he wearing a cravat?
No, sadly not.
Had he done his TV advert by this stage? When are we getting TV?
That probably was around that era. Yeah, where he did his brooding walk down the tunnel.
Yeah,
read our content stuff. But anyway, that was tight. That was tight.
But conditions wise, I'm talking bad weather. You know, you can Newcastle, can't even feel your fingers.
Hammered down with rain.
Colchester.
Colchester's all. I've covered games at Colchester in the snow, and it's completely exposed. I watched Carl Marston, our esteemed colleague here. I watched him. I went to watch Colchester v Luton when Ipswich weren't playing that weekend because I went to watch Flynn Downs on loan for Luton. To him after that. And Carl just, it was torrential rain. Carl just carried on working in the rain and his laptop exploded. He just was just oblivious, just sitting there typing away. The rain's lashing down on his laptop and he seemed shocked when it stopped working.
Yeah, but that's because he's a machine.
Colchester will do that to you.
You didn't, the famous snow game was before your time, wasn't it? The Keno.
I was doing
Leicester.
Colchester then.
Yeah.
Well, you'd have been absolutely fine at that though, Ipswich is... You're well covered. Conditions are getting you
on
there.
On that day, Colchester were due to play Bristol Rovers away, and we got most of the way to Bristol for it to be called off. We was driving back when all that was happening.
There you go, Steve. Thanks for listening. Final question for Mailbag this week. Kez Hawkins, big fan of Stu and Andy's penchant for throwing the occasional Partridge / Office quote into the pod. What's the most Partridge or Brent-esque thing they've witnessed while covering town?
Just Jordan Spence.
He was fully accidental Partridge the whole time, wasn't he?
Very more Brent. More the Brent side of things. Very speaks in riddles.
You'd ask Jordan about current form or bouncing back. Did we play badly? I don't know. What is a bad performance? He was a bit of an existential thinker, wasn't he? You think I'm bad at asking myself questions.
That's literally what I was about to say.
Meet Jordan Spence.
Watson and Spence going round and round with each other for about 40 minutes. Just
asking themselves questions, Boys, that brings us to the end of this historic first proper preview / midweek pod. We have to, of course, finish with a prediction. Now, for weeks now, we've been saying, it's all right, Ipswich Town are going to win this weekend. But let's, honestly, something's happening. No. Honestly, what do you think is going to happen on Saturday? Accrington Stanley are in town. Town are struggling like Billy O. Biggest game of the season, potentially, for Paul Lambert, indeed of his entire Ipswich Town career. Town need to win. Desperately need to win. Are they going to win?
Yes.
Good, excellent.
I think they will.
Score?
I think they're going to win 2-0.
Who do you fancy for getting them goals?
Will Keane.
Yep.
From the bench.
From the bench?
And I think we might have an unexpected scorer. Not unexpected in they've never done it before, but someone like a Sears.
Oh, I was getting excited then.
A Bishop. No, don't. come on. Someone like a Sears or a Bishop. Someone who it will be notable that they've scored.
I hope it's Sears. That'd be tremendous. Stewie, what are you saying?
Yes, they'll win.
Say what you think.
I think
you don't have to say they're going to win.
Head says it might be a draw, but heart says 2-1 win. I think the team that I kind of looked at on paper there and we've discussed, I thought they played without overplaying it. I think Stuart Taylor overplayed it. They played okay at Exeter last weekend and the run of form suggests they're playing worse than they are, maybe. I think they'll win. The injuries that we discussed with Accrington, I think this might have come at a reasonable time for Ipswich. 2-1.
Superb. Let's hope that's the case. Hope you enjoy the game. Hope you've enjoyed this first historic midweek preview Kings of Anglia pod. Get used to it because they're going to be coming at you fast from now on.
Get used to
twice it. A week. We will be back, of course, on Monday with the usual flagship show in studio, all other nonsense attached. Hopefully talking about a win. That'd be tremendous, wouldn't it? And just before we go, I have to mention, obviously, subscribe on your various podcast providers. And also, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We've not had any of them since Marcus Evans left us a review in the middle of December on the night of the live pod, actually. So he obviously enjoyed it. And also follow us on Twitter. The Kings of Anglia now has its own Twitter page where we're tweeting out various stuff related to the pod. So interact with us on there. That'd be fantastic. Boys, we better go and do lots of stuff. Any other business?
No other business.
Excellent.
We'll speak to you again on Monday.